Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace and about economics that I will talk now, and about historic economic events that I will also focus. It's the section about EU days, and I would like to talk now about actually today, the 10th of March. I record this today, and it's a historic day. And it's a historic day for the United States of America and for all friends of America and for the whole world. Because what happened today was the final congressional approval of this COVID relief package, the American Rescue Plan, actually. That's the name. Supposedly there will be another recovery plan additionally. But let's focus on the dimension of what this means historically. It's an amazing, gigantic, and really very big thing. This is one decision of a parliamentarian assembly has approved the spending of $1.9 trillion. In that dimension, this is so huge. This is about 10% of the American GDP of 2020. This is huge in one decision. It's amazing that one parliament can be so powerful to do that additionally, just like that. A wish of the new president, it's happening. And obviously it means a lot. The estimation it will alone add about 1% of global growth. It's, I think, quite logical because it's almost 2 trillion. The world GDP is 86 trillion. So obviously that will add to the global GDP. It's also a sign of how powerful and how important the United States of America is. And it is the global superpower. It's not China and not Russia and not the EU. Let's not fool ourselves. It's the United States of America, and it has proven impressively it's able to act, it's able to lead, it's able to think big and to provide America and the world the rescue package which is needed at this moment. You might ask now, is that fiscally not reckless and is it not too much? Yeah, yes, it's a lot, yeah, but is it needed? In a crisis where basically the demand has to be state-sanctioned, restrained, like this pandemic, there's a lot of interdiction on business activity. I think it's absolutely justified that the state replaces significantly the demand and adds it and transfers it into debt. Yes, I think it's necessary. That's why we have a state and a modern economic system, to help in such kind of external shocks. This is less about a Keynesian kind of somehow leveling the crisis moments and, you know, leveling the economic balance. No, no, no. This is external shock. And for external shock, like a natural disaster, like this is basically, Corona is a specific form of a natural disaster. Absolutely, the state has to intervene. That's our common insurance policy for exactly such kind of a crisis. And the state is there that the crisis doesn't hit the population and the economy directly too hard. It anyhow has a significant impact on the life of all and the life of so many people lost. And it's a tragedy, the whole thing. Who could have expected? I was also never thinking in the beginning of 2020 that this will be so significant and so lasting and so expensive and so tragic. Yeah? I was also very skeptical in the beginning, but, you know, I learned, and it is really a tragedy, and also the costs and all this has to be always kept into consideration, and it's a global crisis. Imagine the dimension of it, yeah? Because what is most famous, obviously, is this comparison with the loss of people with the Second World War, but also see the cost of it. America has now mobilized already $5.5 trillion in this crisis additionally in the recovery. That's 25% of the GDP. That's an enormous amount. World War II was in constant US dollars assumed to be evaluated with 4 trillion or 4.4 trillion. There's different estimations. And that at that time, about 36% of GDP of America. So It's always difficult to compare it over the timeline, the percentages and the trillions. But if you say that this crisis is getting into the dimension of costing gradually similar, like the costs of World War II, at least for the American taxpayers in Europe, obviously, when you the battlefields that cannot be estimated, I think the loss of the destruction level, especially. And let's not compare, I think, too much. Let's stay with the significance. What's the significance of this rescue package? It's obviously enormous. Because what it means is that America will recover faster and grow faster in the coming years again. The point of full employment will be reached faster. The point of growth, it will be higher growth. And also the repaying capacities of America will be much higher again. So even when this is a significant adding up to the national debt, the repaying capacities by higher growth in the coming years will be significant, especially as I hope and I think I'm confident the new president will not change the reduced tax rate, because the 2017 tax law will be maybe changed. But the flagship corporation tax, I don't think it will be touched, because it would be toxic and a lot of complications, and it's even not sure there will be a majority for that in the in a recovery phase. And that debate, I think, will be postponed for later. So ultimately, America, with a very competitive tax system, now with this additional 1.9 trillion. And the spirit of America, the recovery now going so well, the vaccination campaign. Maybe you also had time to see this tremendously strong statement of President Biden today on the vaccination, where he announced the Johnson and Johnson Merck's alliance with additional 100 million vaccines being produced fast in the second quarter, latest in the third quarter, to supply America. And this very strong statement, if you haven't seen it, you have to see in the already at the end of the press conference, a journalist has shouted to the president, "And what about the rest of the world?" And Biden turned around and he said, "I will take care for the rest of the world. We will first vaccinate America by May, and then we will vaccinate the world." I mean, and it will be like that. It's not China and Russia and this kind of, annoying kind of things. Obviously, it's very good if everybody contributes to this crisis. It's very good what China does, and it's very good what Russia does. They also have top scientists, they contribute. But why they can now distribute vaccines everywhere in the world? Not everywhere, but at least very publicly promoting. Because they simply don't vaccinate their own population. That's it's very difficult for democracies to do that and to justify. By the way, we have like China, 1.4 billion people. We vaccinate you by time, but we need to take 100 million of the vaccines, because we have to also send it to India, Pakistan, and to Africa. That's easier, let's say, for dictatorships. And that's not so easy for democracies, this kind of justification. It might not sound very fair. And I understand that equality is important and, equal cover for all. But in democracies, obviously, it's a very difficult decision. And we see that also in Europe, that it takes a lot of European solidarity. Because normally the bigger states would obviously be much faster and could buy all the vaccines. And now we have Europeanized the supplies, and obviously that creates a lot of complications all over. And then you see already the kind of complications in that one. Let me stay with economics. It's not only about vaccination here, it's about economics. What means this 1.9 trillion? Let's imagine. And I have to accredit here the study of the Atlantic Council Geoeconomics. That's a really very good website and a good think tank. And check the data. It's really amazing. They compared the fiscal response of the most important G20 states, and I will only talk about the most important: China, Germany, Japan, France, UK, Italy, and of course the US. And then to compare what they spent in terms of GDP percentage during the great financial crisis of 2008 and 9, the US has spent 6.5% of its GDP for a rescue recovery. Now it's 25.4. I mean, imagine what the dimension of the fiscal response is. Germany has spent 3%, and remember, Obama was so pissed, yeah? And then Germany is now at 11%. So Germany is about staying always half of the fiscal capacity. You know, Germany can also not do the same. That's also connected to the currency, the lead currency, the capacity is at different size, but it's at half of it. China has done 16.5 in 2008, but we have to say that China's economy was significantly smaller in 2008, and now it has only done 5%. And as well, the whole corona crisis obviously started in China, but it is much better managed there, because again, and I'm in no way defending autocracies here, but of course they had a much harder response in terms of lockdowns and supervision and intrusion, and they were successful with that, and they had to spend only 5% up to now, and they are growing for sure very successfully in 2022 for sure, and even in 21 again. Japan 3.4 in 2008 and 15%. That is much more than Germany already, and they are also more successful. Then you see the United Kingdom also in 16%, like similar like Japan. France, it's only 7.7. Italy, 6.8. And you see that is about the difference. And what I want to say with these numbers, I don't want to be too confusing in podcasts with numbers. It's not so easy. But in principle, the US is by far the strongest response. Yeah. Italy and France far behind, China in a different universe, obviously, and the UK and Japan about the same, and Germany lagging behind. And here comes my call, what I made also on Twitter, and I want to make sure that it really has to happen. We need to make a second rescue package in the European Union, similar like the 2021. We need a second one. We need to add another 750 billion. It was historic what we did in the summer in July 2020. That was the right response. Adding first time actually, it was really historic as well, to add an additional debt capacity to the European Union. Normally the EU cannot take debt. The EU is basically funded by the member states directly. It's about a budget of 160 million every year. So it's about a trillion a year, which is basically given to by the member states, the 27 to the European Union. So 165 per year, about a trillion is always what it's very short budget, and it should definitely rise. And what happened now in this crisis, first time, it was an add-up of 750 billion, which the member states granted towards the European Union. And we need a second one. And that's, of course, outrageous, and many people will say, what are you saying? But we have many tasks at the European level, especially when it comes also to supporting the more fragile member states, like Spain, like Italy, but also the future member states. Also, again, Ukraine is very hard hit by the corona crisis. The Balkans, we have to be more solidaric. There is enough usage for this money, don't worry. Absolutely, there is enough, and very much better than we're adding up on some of the member states, because as long as the crisis now takes in Europe, also with the vaccination, we definitely need to add up. And the numbers are evidence of this. In Germany, just 11% has been mobilized. In France, just 7.7. In Italy, 6.8. And Italy has already a lot of debt. So we need to do it via the European level. And we need it especially via France and Germany. Especially Germany can easily add up to 4% of GDP This is anyhow not needed. Yeah, it will not be such a dimension. 750 on the European level, that is absolutely necessary, and it's absolutely necessary now. Because I would like to add to the debate the comparison about the recovery time after a recession, after a big external shock. Yeah. I'm not talking about normal business cycles, but big external shocks like we had in 2008. It was wild. It was also in 2001 with the terror attack and the consequent crisis. But also it happened also in the 90s when suddenly the whole world was changing. And obviously there was a lot of turmoil with the opening of Eastern Europe. And always it's the same. Yeah. Comes external shock, and they come regularly every decade, from time to time, every 5 years. But there come these major external shocks, events you cannot foresee. And what is happening? America is much more united and stronger, united fiscally, because it's a real continental union, and it has the capacity to effectively counter a cycle, invest and defend the real economy with this central fiscal power it has. And Europe has only little of it. Recently, a little bit more. But overall, we are always too inflexible, too less united, and we are taking too less risk, and we are then adding too little of central fiscal countermeasures towards the crisis, and we consequently grow less. And when you see the GDP per capita curve of the European Union compared to the US, especially since 2008, we have really significantly fallen back towards compared to the US. And the US is now around $60,000, and we are about 35,000, yeah, overall. You know, obviously we added a lot of people as well, about 100 million people with the EU enlargement, but also the US has added about 80 million people in the last 30 years, yeah. So we both, the US and the EU, we added quite significantly population, but the US is still much further ahead. And when you see the curve, yeah, the kind of growth constantly moving upwards in the US, and we really see each crisis again, we bottom out, we take about 3 years longer to recover to similar levels of growth like pre-crisis levels, and then to catch up with the US slowly. And then comes the next shock, and we are again backwards because our systems are not flexible enough, we are not united enough. Our central opportunity and power to respond effectively in the crisis and faster is too limited. And so, contrary to what actually should be the case, that we as the poorer sister of the West are catching up, we are falling back. And we're falling back in the 90s, we're falling back in the 2000s, and we're falling back in the 2010s, and absolutely we will fall further back in the 2020s as well, because we don't really, first of all, are not united enough. We don't enlarge, because what saved us a bit in the 2000s was, of course, to take in a lot of people from Eastern Europe, which were a very strong supply of labor, and they were very good additional and hungry part of entrepreneurship, innovation. And this was the real success stories of the 2000s when the enlargement happened. Yeah. Economically, it was a major boost for the European productivity and stability in economic growth. The whole dynamic of the European system was in Eastern Europe after that. In the 2010s, it worked still to some extent, but we were already, the big catch-up efforts from the East, from Central Europe was over. And, the America was much more dynamically in the 2010s. And again, it will be the same in the 2020s. And maybe I'm alone in Europe who thinks that we actually should be as rich as the North Americans. Maybe I'm alone. I'm also alone in Austrian NATO debate. Maybe I'm quite single. Maybe. But, wouldn't it be much better to be as rich as the North Americans? I mean, why do we have to live at two-thirds of the prosperity level I mean, the war is long time ago. Europe is, with all from the people, from the conditions, a rich continent. We have industry, agriculture, innovation, technology. We are not by nature the somehow limited in our growth potential. We have also very rich parts in Europe, yeah? Like Norway, Switzerland, Luxembourg. Also, Austria is not really poor, but when you compare it with the member states of the United States of America, the 50 states that make the Union, we are very much in the bottom third, even when we are in Europe, one of the richest 10. And when you see the richer parts of like Sweden and Netherlands, we are somewhere nowhere up on the ladder. It's only Luxembourg which can compete. Switzerland is not a member, Norway not a member. The rest, we are in the bottom third when we ever, you can add most of the European member states much on the lowest part of this comparison. And you have to compare the 27 member states with the 50 member states of the United States, yeah? Because they're also very diverse, yeah? You have traditionally also very poor region, like in the South and in the Midwest, and they are all richer than most of the European member states. Yeah. Obviously, not all of them. There is this specific differences, but principally, it's quite a shocking balance when we see it. And I belong to the people who think that when we catch up, and we should, we are 17 years. 75 years after World War II, we are also rich, free, and secured and fine. So we should be at least going into the direction of the United States. But no, it's not only since the great financial crisis that we are falling back. We have been falling back as well in the beginning of the 2000s, but we were catching up with the enlargement. But unfortunately, yeah, this inflexibility which we have in our system, the high taxes in Germany and France and in Italy, and the restrictions on the labor market, the many sectors, we have a very incomplete internal market. There's a great book of Anders Aslund about that one. I recommend it very heavily, about completing the European growth gap. It's a wonderful book where it goes in great details in all the sectors, from energy to telecoms to railways, transportation. We have a very incomplete internal market, even when we are so proud about it, yeah. But in many sectors, it's far from complete. And that's also why we are poorer. In America, there is also issues, obviously, in America, obviously, as we have seen with some of the sectors. But in principle, it's much more open. And see it in the corona crisis again, what happened? Not just the 1.9 trillion, which is now saving the world, yeah? And this ability to really do concentrated national efforts, like in this Warp Speed program for the vaccination. We in Europe were never able to mobilize the similar level of resources at that starting point, or to do such kind of industrial coordination strategy as now America does under this War Defense Act. Yeah. We have not the legal tools, we never have the authority. We ultimately spend as much money as America, because also the cost of the crisis and of the vaccination program will be distributed to all the member states. But nobody in Europe has a similar kind of central authority like the American president. Even when they're all called presidents and they're also well paid, but they are working by committees and having to consult everybody first. And there is no way that we can pre-purchase such kind of activities or fund private sector directly in this unprecedented way as it was done in the Warp Speed program, where we could not really fund manufacturing in any. We could buy vaccines, but not fund manufacturing prior. That was all instruments we still lack and we have to get if we want to compete. And that I think we should, yeah, not negatively compete, but at least be a good participator of the rescue of the global economy in this crisis. We must be taking responsibility. We have already, but it's not enough. I mean, doing something which is historic is good, yeah? But when the when the task gets bigger, we simply have to get bigger as well and live up to the challenge. And this is very complicated still to this day in Europe to find this unity for leadership. And there's this election and that election, and it's all, you know, nobody wants to take any responsibility beyond what is already decided. And that's a significant problem. That's our economic side of our problem. And in the recent podcast, I talked more about Eastern Europe and our problems at the periphery. But we also have a problem in the center, in the decision making, in the unity, in the mobilization of resources in the time of crisis, in the decision making during the time of crisis. Because also, you know, we have never achieved this kind of institutional coherence, which America has already since 240 years. Yeah. That's, of course, a major task for the coming years to achieve that. We need different tools, American tools. We need similar level of central fiscal authority, and we need more unity with the currency in NATO, in the EU. But we need to be ready, and also from the level of authority, to simply in the time of a crisis to also mobilize resources faster, order something, and not to take everybody's opinion so, and democracies must be able to act in emergencies as well. It's not I want to explain maybe what is the Corbeil. The Corbeil is like the something like the Senate committee, but it's the ambassadors of all member states at the European Union, which is then the main decision meeting in between the ministers. And it's very complicated because we have most things, and unfortunately, unanimity, it's called correctly. That means it's similar, like all the senators have to agree. So we have a system where we basically have a Senate that's basically the representative of the member states. Historically, it was the same in America before many constitutions and a century before. But it's still the representatives of the member states, but they decide mostly with 50% or with 60 senators, or you have this with different majorities as well. We have in many ways 100% of the senators / ministers or their ambassadors have to agree on most things, and that's really very annoying. Nevertheless, we will get better over time. Now this podcast, I want to come to a close, and the historic dimension of what President Biden and the US Congress just did today on the 10th of March is really will go into European and global economic history as one of the most decisive legislative acts in world economic history. And it was unprecedented, to my best knowledge, such a decision, such a mobilization. And in the whole context of the 2020-2021 corona crisis, to mobilize in America alone $5.5 trillion additionally as a crisis response is simply unprecedented. Yeah, it's really very big, and it is really very good, and it should be complemented by Europe taking additional $750 billion at least, and then to add up, because we need to make sure that the global recovery is strong, and that not China is the only one coming out of this corona crisis unharmed and successful, but that we also recover. It will not bring the people we lost back, but we have to focus on the future of economic growth, make sure that we build a better world back better again, and that the West is more united, and I'm confident it will. But it would be good if the Europeans chip in a bit more. And additionally, I'm really upset, just let me end you on that one, that the Austrians, my fellow Austrians, they have now started to boycott again the Mercosur FTA. This is the most important FTA free trade agreement, which is ready for signature. And it was already negotiated. Now it needs only to be ratified. The Austrians want to block it, because that's really very bad. Because in a global crisis, what is the toxic is protectionism and is currency crises. And that we have seen in all of the crises in the past, we have to focus very much on stability of the currencies and keep the markets open. And that's very important. And the Mercosur agreement would be a big additional openness sign. And then some green populists and some weak characters from a small, less important member state like Massachusetts, they block the trade policy of all the European Union. That's highly unfair and that's very toxic. So anyhow, that's a big additional extra. This was a very actual podcast now of today's event. I will then focus again on the wars of the past and how to make peace. But it's also about economics, what I want to talk here in this podcast, about better economics. And we need for peace, obviously, also economic strength. Our enemies are also watching. If America comes now with this decision back really strongly, the political capital of President Biden has enormously multiplied with this decision. That's absolutely a fact, and his enemies and the enemies of the West have taken notice. Yeah. So I hope that with similar kind of determination, all the other issues will be tackled, like also NATO enlargement, EU enlargement, and Euro enlargement, and all the other open issues. The enemies of the free world have been notified. America is really back. I had a very field day today with these press conferences and with these decisions. It was wonderful to see America endorsed this kind of massive recovery plan, not just for America, but for the whole world. And let me close with thanking the American people for this great leadership. And I'm confident also Europe will live up to the challenge. And let's get out of this terrible mess of the Corona COVID crisis and let's build back better. Thanks a lot for listening.